Hello, my name is Connor.
And I'm Jason.
And you are listening to the Amazed and Perplexed podcast.
Want to begin today with a shout out to Michaelyn Robinson. She posed a question to us this week about the Luke 16 parable of the shrewd manager, and we have done an episode, and so I directed her to that, and then we are having a conversation about that, and just love that so much, and so I'm grateful for her taking the time to ask the question, to listen, and to give feedback. I could do this podcast forever simply because I love talking to Connor about these kind of things, but it's just a whole nother layer of joy and challenge to be able to process those. So thank you so much, Michaelyn, and just prayerful that my responses make sense. So that's always, I would like it to make sense a little. That's what I'm always looking for. But today we are jumping into Matthew chapter 8. We're continuing to look over the shoulder of Jesus, and we're watching to give dignity to the people involved in the process. We're not simply looking for the, quote, moral of the story, unquote. We're simply trying to experience what's happening, what's being said, putting ourselves in that situation. And so, Connor, in relation to what we're going to cover, what kind of things might we keep in mind? What are we looking for that you may notice?
Yeah, so I think we're going to talk about what the NIV would title the cost of following Jesus. And, you know, I think this is it's a very interesting concept to talk about, because the cost of following Jesus, like for us today, is going to have different mileage. It's going to look completely different for Jason, for me, for other people. But when Jesus is directly addressing what it's going to take to actually physically follow him 2,000 years ago, what's really fascinating is when Jesus wants to set what the expectation is to follow him in reality, like 2,000 years ago, physically follow him and be a follower of his. He both sets a emotional standard and also a physical standard. And you have this expectation. If there's a big movement happening, a big uprising happening, you know, we have a very settled society where we live. There aren't too many, you know, uprisings by the lower, you know, the peasant class. But that would have been a much more common thing in their day because things were just not near as settled. A lot of people were in a lot more misery. So people were oftentimes looking in a way to further their life, to gain a step up, to take a step up in terms of lifestyle, in terms of just being able to live and be comfortable. And Jesus, when he talks about what it's going to be like following him, he is very real with them and says, hey, listen, you're going to be homeless. You're not going to have any place to be all the time. You're never going to be settled even. And so I think it's really important. There's so many things we'll be able to talk about here, but it's important to think about when we're trying to give dignity to this. Jesus is not presenting some sort of glamorous lifestyle to these people. You know, for us in our modern 21st century, you tell me, hey, Connor, there's this whole new thing where we're going to go live out in the wilderness and, you know, it's going to be great because we're going to like pray all the time and we're going to eat. I'm like, okay, like there's a part of my brain that could go like that. That's so foreign and unique and interesting that I could be like, I could do that for a couple months. But the idea for a peasant 2,000 years ago being like, hey, you know how you're already not comfortable and you live in a hut with, you know, your whole family, you're going to be even more uncomfortable. You're going to be even like less physically fulfilled than you would before. And so this is a pretty extreme thing that Jesus lays down as a reality of following him.
I love that. And I love that picture of, again, context. Even the teacher of the law, even if he had some clout or some power, his first thought would still be, I'm powerless because of the Roman occupation. And so it is fascinating. Another piece of this, just as setup, is the disciples are with him. Jesus' disciples are with him. And then they're approached by a teacher of the law who is a disciple, because it says in 21, another disciple and a disciple. So these are both followers. And I just wonder, from Jesus's disciples who are become his apostles, how they're hearing all of these conversations around this, you know, and does it make them feel good about themselves? Does it say, oh, is that what he expects from us? You know, because it's fascinating, and this may come up in our discussion, but he never calls any disciple the same way. Now, I mean, he may call them in a group, like Peter, Andrew, James, and John were in the same kind of group, fishers of men, but he doesn't say fishers of men to Nathaniel. He doesn't say fishers of men. Like, we don't even know for most of them. But it is fascinating how he just, for us to be listening to, what is he saying and why is he answering it this way?
Yeah, no, that's so good. So if you want to pick up with us and read along, we'll be in Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 18. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." So Jason, what amazes you?
Jesus's confidence. Jesus's, and maybe it's also his, I don't want to say this. I don't know what it's like to be completely passionate about something and not be consumed with how other people respond. Okay. So Jesus is completely passionate about God, about the message he's bringing, about the fact he's going to offer himself as a ransom for the whole world and become the single solitary way, the mediator, everything. And yet he is not concerned with their response. I am planning, so here's my comparison. I am planning a retreat right now for the congregation I preach at, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm planning it. It's my idea. I'm putting all this work into it. I have to work hard. Now, confession of a really insecure guy here, okay? I have to work hard when people don't sign up for it to not take it personal. So I am passionate about this, not as passionate as I am about Jesus. So this is an expression of that. But I have a hard time saying, "Hey, here's all the reasons you should do this," and people saying no. I certainly wouldn't say, "Hey, by the way, you're going to sleep on a mattress that's going to give you a backache for two to four days, depending on your age and previous health." You know what I mean? I'm not highlighting the hard parts. Mm-hmm. I'm highlighting the gain, even if there may be built-in hard parts. And it's not that I'm trying to whitewash it or spin it, but I do recognize if we emphasize the heart, like where is the glory of God in here? And Jesus is just so confident in God that he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to say these things that are likely to, you know, put you off."
Yeah, so there's something really fascinating here. Like, for you, you're not afraid of telling people, like, "Oh yeah, the mattress is going to be really uncomfortable. Who knows who else has slept on it? The air in the cabin is going to be the stalest air you've ever breathed in your entire life."
I hope none of our people listen to this before.
I love church camp so much. It's church camp, church retreat places. They are both simultaneously, this is it, they're both simultaneously like the worst place to sleep and the most comforting for my soul. I don't know why. I know some people have so many hard feelings with like retreat centers and stuff like that. There's that very particular smell that like it smells bad, but it smells like home to me. But like for you, you're completely willing to be like, "Hey, there are these hard parts that they're built in and they're going to be difficult." But your natural inclination is like you would never lead with that. Like, you would never purposely like, "Oh, this is how I'm going to start the conversation." And Jesus, not all the time, starts the conversation this exact same way. And so the amazing thing that I'm hearing you say is like the fact that Jesus seems to talk to these people and address what they're thinking about, what they're talking about, not based on what his preconceived inclination should be. It seems to be so much more focused on them or even focused on them and less on making Jesus feel better about a situation, because Jesus doesn't have to make himself feel better about how well attended his next event is. I don't know. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That is it. It's his confidence, his self-worth. I mean, he is fully sold on the fact that God accepts him as he is. He does not have to perform. And so my sense of this is he's telling each of these people exactly what they really need to do. Like, he senses, here's a block in you. Here's a thing that's going to make you struggle. And obviously the overall point is this is not meant to be, easy. It's not made intentionally hard. Don't misunderstand. It's not difficult because, well, you just got to make it difficult. It's the idea, the nature of walking with God from a human perspective creates, in many ways, more problems, not less problems. Because you're sacrificing, your whole mind is suddenly in a different kingdom, in a different reality. If you really think eternity every day, and I'm not talking about just wishing problems away, but like, man, this is going to bless somebody's eternity, this is going to affect or impact somebody's eternity, you'll sacrifice way more. But if you're only thinking about, man, are people going to kill me? or am I going to make enough money? Or can I pay the bills or whatever? If you're only, no, you're going to think about it, but if you're only thinking about that, then it shapes how you do. Am I going to be liked? That's a more fundamental thing. How are these people going to treat me if I say this? And his lack of concern, he's satisfied with 12. Yeah. You know, and that's a thing that I don't have the freedom. I don't feel like to be satisfied with a smaller number than, you know, there. And I don't know. There's a lot there, but it is that confidence. But what about you? Like, what amazes you?
Yeah, I think it's just how brilliant Jesus is in terms of how he is looking specifically at the teacher of the law. And he is saying, with his statement, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He is saying so much to them, to us. Like, there's so much here. And first, just the first thing that's poking out at me is, as incredible about this, is it just continues to say, like, hey, your expectations of what this is, of what following me is, it's inverse of everything you always thought it would be. So, you know, you look at the beautiful creatures of God, the foxes and the birds, and they have a place to stay. And I'm saying, even in this movement, in this kingdom movement, we don't even have it as good as them. And so the king comes not with, you know, comes not in a parade on a litter with gold dangling off the side, but he comes in a little bit ragged and smelly, and maybe even a little worse off than the I want to keep saying the foxes and dens, but it's the foxes and the birds. And for me, there is something so beautiful and so challenging about how Jesus presents this, because this is at the core of the nature of his kingdom, of the upside down nature of his kingdom. The contrarian, not the contrarian, because he's not doing it to be contrarian, but he's doing it because this is the way the world is formed. This is the way that we were always supposed to live. That when you live the way that Jesus is living and calling us to live, it will fundamentally be uncomfortable, and it will fundamentally not lead you into necessarily lead you into earthly pleasures or being more physically comfortable. But this is at the heart. And the amazing thing to me is that he doesn't feel the need to go on and be like, okay, yeah, you're not going to have this, but you are going to have this. And maybe he does kind of do that a little bit when he talks about to the next disciple or the next person and says, you know, he's basically saying, like, we're about life, we're about what's happening. So I don't know. Yeah, there's so much here that's so incredible to me. And again, part of what you're saying, like the confidence to say what Jesus says, which is amazing, but then not to immediately flip and say, and also because of that, the natural consequence or what flows from that of the good, what the good part about that is, because I could tell somebody, if I'm going to present the gospel or why they should follow Jesus, I could say, like, listen, it's not going to be comfortable. It's not going, all your problems are not going to be solved overnight. You're not going to become extremely wealthy. But I'm always going to have the but these good things are going to flow from it, and these good things are going to happen, and you're going to have fulfillment, and you're going to have you're going to live in the way that you were always called to live, and you're going to have this synchronization with your Father that you were always supposed to have. I could say those first hard parts, but I'm going to zip as quick as I can to the good parts. And yeah, it's incredible to me that Jesus is so comfortable and so okay with how he's living is enough to present the good parts. And also the underlying message of what he's saying will present that. But he's also not like, but you get it, right? You understand, right? He lets it be what it is.
Yeah, I see that too as freedom. It's really fascinating because
that's a good word for it.
Initially,
yeah.
I see this as, ugh, like this, make, and it does. I mean, I'm not denying if I'm all of a sudden, hey, Heather, guess what? I sold the house and gave it to the poor, and now you and I are just walking the wilderness. And I'm not suggesting that's better or worse than the way I'm living now. How do I say this? I'm not saying that's better or worse. I do recognize that if I was totally sold out to that, I'd have more freedom. Mm-hmm. And I'd be more usable to God if I was literally just walking and, hey, where are we going to sleep? Well, wherever, you know. And so it's not homeless in the sense of, oh, man, I'm the unhoused in this story. It's intentional. I'm watching for God's lead. And some of those nights, he may provide a place for me to sleep, and sometimes I'm sleeping outside in the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's the dynamic of it is, and he's not prescribing, here's how we're spending all of our nights. He's simply saying, what you find to secure, what's your signal of what makes things good and normal, that's not really what disciples are looking for.
Well, and here's the important thing. Could Jesus do most of what he does, but then also find a way to make sure that they had secure housing every night? Like, is Jesus smart enough? Is the Holy Spirit powerful enough to where they could make sure that, like, part of Jesus' brain power is always taken up by making sure that him and his have a comfortable place to stay at night? I think Jesus is powerful enough and smart enough to make that happen. And yet, he chooses not to. And so what does that say about Jesus and what he's about?
Yeah, I totally see that. And my mind goes on and on. I'm going to shift to what perplexes me. And it's the idea of, and this is so frequent, I feel like, in my experience with this, but it's the idea of him being so aggressive about concepts that I think would be taboo. And I don't know the complete nature of Jewish culture, but if anything, my sense of it is that they would feel, speaking specifically to let the dead bury their dead, or bury their own dead, it's that idea of, your responsibility in ceremonial and ritualistic ways would be much, much more stringent in the Jewish culture than in, say, the American culture right
Absolutely,
now.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so this seems to really, it's just trying to say, okay, how are you, Jesus says another place, I've not come to abolish the law, I've come to fulfill it. And how you treat the dead is part of the law. And so how does your take... So I think I truly, truly believe that when Jesus responds, he's responding as love incarnate, like, you know, bodily love here. And he's or love given a body. I think that's probably better expressed. But it's the idea. He's saying the most loving thing. I think this is what this particular disciple needs. And simultaneously, I'm like, how do you make this fit with all the commands that this man would be living under? Keep in mind, he's not a New Testament person. He still lives under the Old Testament. And so I don't know. It's just, I mean, yeah. if everybody followed this, then there'd be a bunch of dead people laying around. And I do understand there's a figurative piece of this. I'm simply talking about what is the average person taking in, you know,
sure.
And how would you apply it? And then I'm wondering about me. What am I taking in? And of course, I'm trying to respond to something that was written thousands of years ago and saying, okay, how does that fit in my world? But it's just, it's a very perplexing space to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is perplexing. It makes me even wonder, like, it's so perplexing. I'm like, is it one of those things where we get to heaven and Jesus goes, yeah, I knew that was Derek. I knew Derek really well. This is what Derek needed to hear. And like, there's some things you could have taken away from it. And obviously, like, there's some further thing, but like, I just love Derek enough and I knew him well enough to know that like, this is what he needed to hear. And you go, oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense now. Because it almost, there's an intimacy here that if there is an intimacy, it almost seems outrageously, not just callous, but mean and rude and super uncool. And that in itself is perplexing. I'm not saying that for Jesus to not have sinned against this man, he had to have known him intimately. Like, I think there are certainly ways that I can think about this that I can... Not that I need to justify Jesus, but where it makes sense in my mind and I understand where he's coming from. But yeah, there for me, there almost has to be like this knowledge of this guy, a specific knowledge of this guy that Jesus is working under for this to make sense. And I could be wrong in that. I'm okay with that, but there almost has to be.
Yeah, I totally believe that. I think there is something that is, it does feel oddly intimate and offensive, but intimate. And we understand that for you and I to talk to each other, we've known each other a long time. There are some things we say to each other that out of context may seem severe or harsh, aggressive, yeah. Even rude. And so that's good. The thing that I think just, again, kind of taking it to its nth degree, like where does this end up if we make dead people, so let the dead bear their own dead. In other words, if you make that figurative, it's like the people that aren't proclaiming the kingdom of God, let them bury the dead. So does that mean all burial needs to take place by unsaved people, like non-Christians? Mm-hmm. How far should we carry that? Is it ever okay for Christians to bury the dead? And I know Jesus would have said, that's not what I meant. But again, this guy, we have no idea, the disciple in question here, that this is an interaction. Does he have 100 more interactions with Jesus, or is this it? Mm-hmm. It's like when Jesus espouses, you know, sounds like he's espousing cannibalism, and I go back to that a lot, but it's like, for those people, what do they do with that message? Is that the only message they hear, and they go back to their city and say, yeah, I knew this guy claimed to be the Son of God, and he told us we should be cannibals, and I don't want that. It's just fascinating to me that because I have access to the whole Bible, I'm not suggesting I have a mastery of all the content, but I can look. But they have this one interaction, you know, and Jesus just entrusts that to God.
Yeah, so you can look at this interaction because you have intimate knowledge of God and the Bible. You've spent so much time with it, you can understand. But like, I have so much more grace than I would have when I was younger for people who would have taken something like this and made a steadfast rule like that. You know, there are so many examples that we could find throughout Scripture of people reading a specific thing and then just taking it to the nth degree, like you said, and it becoming the focal point of what they do about God. And I have so much more grace because there is a part here where, like, if you don't have this intimacy with God and you don't have this knowledge and you aren't actively studying, where you could get tripped up on 100 things that Jesus says and make them the focal point or carry them out to the nth degree. And I think there is something to be said here that's really compelling. I think we all do that with certain things that Jesus says. Like, we all do things that maybe are not as obvious or as outrageous as kind of what you're suggesting could a rational person could take to mean here. And I think the challenge for me goes, like, it's easy to see how this would be wrong to say, oh, okay, Christians shouldn't bury anybody. Only non-Christians should bury people, or should take care of funeral services. Like, I have enough Bible that I'm very comfortable in saying that's not what Jesus is trying to get after here. But are there other things where I have Jesus didn't tell me to go to the nth degree, and I've taken it to the nth degree, and I've built this whole system around it that isn't as obvious or isn't as ridiculous sounding on its head. Do I need more to do more reflection on it? The answer is always yes. But maybe around the specific thing, I need to go like, okay, yeah, are there some things that are not as patently obvious? Here's the better question. What is the thing that Jesus would challenge me on that if you took the nth degree would seem to be ridiculous, but then if Jesus knows me intimately, you go, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense because Jesus knows Connor so well.
I think that's perfect. And I think that's the thing, that Scripture is always calling us to humble ourselves and listen in the same way that Jesus wanted these people to listen when he talked to them. And because the word is living and active, it does get personalized. I believe the Holy Spirit's working right now on me, on you, on whoever's listening to this, whenever they listen to it, and saying, hey, if you have ears to hear, I've got something to share with you that will be personalized. And I love that. That's why I love getting reactions from people about episodes, mm-hmm. because invariably it's different than what I would take. But once I hear it, I mean, I can't think of an example where once I hear somebody respond to an episode, I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that application. I didn't even see how that showed up. And that's the beauty of the body of Christ. This is why, yes, you could be saved and be on your own, but I don't think you grow and I don't think you learn in the way God intends for us to be in community, sharing our different perspectives, because no matter how long you've been following God, you have a unique creative ability that God put inside of you that's going to bring something different to the text. And I just think that's beautiful. What about perplexing for you?
Yeah, so I think there's some reasons we don't get a follow-up with these two guys, but I just think how valuable it would be. It would just be so valuable to be like, oh yeah, the first guy was like, okay, yeah, I'm in. The teacher of law was like, yeah, okay, I'm in. I'm good. The second guy was like, nah, I gotta go take care of this. But we don't get that, and I feel slightly less enriched by what it could be. And so, yeah, there is a sense here in which, like, there's clearly intimate knowledge that Jesus has of these two dudes. And yet the intimacy doesn't continue on enough for us to find out what their choice is or what there is. And so it's like, okay, God, that wasn't what was important for God to get down, was what choice they made. What was important where Jesus' words. And I go, okay, what do I do with that? Because I just want to know. Like, I really, really want to know. And that's where I find myself, where I go, okay, I can see why God chose for it to be reported this way, but this wasn't the end of the story. And like, it doesn't feel like it would take that much to get, you know, the next progression and be like, oh yes. And the teacher of law became a valuable member, and he came back around Pentecost and was this incredible, you know, or vice versa. Like, it was too much for him. And he was in the crowd condemning Jesus, or, you know, whatever it would be. It would just be so helpful. And maybe that the thing that comes down to it is I'm not supposed to know. And there's maybe it is a mark of the intimacy that Jesus has with these men, that like, that's between them and Jesus. I don't know.
I love that. That's between them and Jesus. There's something fascinating to me about that. And I wonder how much we would be served when I experience something. I'm like, God, if you want me to share this with somebody, I will. But I'm also okay with it just being between me and you. That's fascinating to me. I think about what you're saying. Like, I love, one of the things I love watching, why I love watching true stories, like, you know, made into movies, is when they go and they say, John, I especially think of like military stuff, when they're like, John ended up going home and he had a great life. And even if parts of it are sad, you know, I don't know, there's closure. And I guess generally speaking, most movies you don't know, and you assume, well, they lived happily ever after, or whatever the flow of the kind of conclusion would lead you to. But yeah, I would love to have, what do you call it?
Epilogue, or exit
interviews, or yeah, that would be fascinating. It's like, where was this when this guy, the day before this guy, this lady, whoever died, how did this affect them? And, mm-hmm. and what did they really hear? And I mean, there'd just be so much richness. You know, they don't need to be especially talented or especially skilled at communicating. Them simply saying, hey, here's what happened with this, I think it'd be amazing, mm-hmm. you know, because when I hear other people tell their stories, like just friends of mine tell their stories about watching God work in their life for years and years, it's always amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, yeah, that's, I don't know, maybe that's what I'll do. I'll be a journalist in heaven. I'll go and interview all these people.
I think, that's going to be so exciting to see. But I think, yeah, for me, maybe the answer is, or maybe one of the pieces of it is Jesus is actually covertly giving so much dignity to these men by not using them as a parable, not using them as a cautionary tale, or not holding them up as an idol, that's something they couldn't be. Because there's always the possibility that they responded greatly in this moment and then didn't respond great in the next moment, and you go, oh well, they did really well, but then the exit interview, they ended up on crack and on the street, and they did great that one time when Jesus questioned him, but the next time they failed and they whatever. But yeah, there's something here to go, like, to remind me both of the intimacy that Jesus wants to have, that he will have with us if we choose to follow him, if we choose to go in deeper. And the power in that is that it's always important to have people around us in community, right, living our lives and pursuing Jesus together. But there's always a piece between my relationship with Jesus, your relationship with Jesus, where like, I am not going to be able to fully interpret it 100%. I'm not going to be able to fully understand the uniqueness between you and Jesus, and you're not going to be able to fully understand the uniqueness between me and Jesus. And there are pieces, and it's going to be so good. It's so good to explore those together. But I think it's a good guardrail to make sure our judgment doesn't go way out of hand. It doesn't get out in front of us in terms of stopping us from community and stopping us from mutually benefiting from following Jesus together, to recognize that, okay, there's a unique thing happening between this person that's frustrating me over here, or this person who's getting it completely right in this other direction. There's a uniqueness between them and Jesus that I don't have the privilege of knowing. And that's a good thing, because I get that same privilege with him.
I think that it's just a beautiful way to end. I never thought we'd get from these questions to everybody has a unique mm-hmm. thing going with Jesus. And I feel like, how could you not notice that? Like, that's why all these stories are different. Abraham's story is not Joshua's story, is not Miriam's story, is not Peter's story.
Yeah.
And
you see the story of the Old Testament. Why do they keep repeating these same stories over and over? Why do these things keep happening? It's because they're all different. They're all, you know, and there's a point sometimes when I would read the Old Testament or even the New Testament, you're like, yeah, I get it. Or yeah, there's this thing. And it's just this point that God seems to want to hammer home over and over and over again.
That's absolutely true. Good, good stuff.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And like Jason said, we love any sort of feedback or questioning. We might not always have the ability to point you to an exact episode. It might inspire an episode, but we love extra feedback because we know there are so many cool things that God are doing in your lives and perspectives that God has gifted you. And so we are richer, and other listeners are richer every time you reach out to us. Grace, peace, and love.